DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
If you don't mind, I want to begin the show by asking you a question, and then I'm going to come back and answer the question here in a couple of minutes. So here's the question off the top of the program today for you to think about and sort of marinate over for a minute before we actually get into this topic. I want you to picture for a second, it's late in the season, November. Big game, let's just say Auburn, for instance, here. Georgia's facing a 3rd and 5. That play, that sequence always seems to come to my mind. 3rd and 5, game on the line, somewhere near midfield. What kind of play do you want Georgia to call right there? Who do you want to see the ball go to? We'll talk more about your answer to that, my answer to that, coming up in just a minute. It's great to have you here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. We're obviously going to get into a lot of very serious football stuff here today during our program. I do want to begin, though, with something that's not quite so serious, and this is sort of just sort of fun. A lot of you can, especially if you're my age, you can think back to a time in which Steve Spurrier, the former Florida coach, former South Carolina coach, less so at South Carolina, more so at Florida, although there were plenty of examples of this at South Carolina too. Boy, he just always loved taking a jab at Georgia, didn't he? He always found a way to, you know, really kind of rub it in Georgia's face when Spurrier was having success at Florida and Georgia wasn't, or at South Carolina when maybe Georgia wasn't quite having as much success as a lot of dog fans felt like the program should be having. Steve Spurrier was sort of always there to kind of remind you of Georgia's shortcomings. That's why yesterday I was listening to the Paul Feinbaum show a little bit, and I heard that Steve Spurrier was going to be on the program. And I had a little bit of a forethought of, I'm almost pretty sure Paul's going to ask him at some point in time about Georgia. And that's sort of a get your popcorn ready moment for me, because all the other stuff that Steve Spurrier used to say about Georgia, you can't say that stuff anymore. You know, the thing about, oh, I like playing them early in the season because they got a bunch of players that they're going to be suspended. Listen, Kirby Smart's been a sort of a rock-solid disciplinarian, I think, at Georgia, at least for the most part. That jab doesn't work at Georgia anymore. This idea that Georgia's only third best in the SEC East behind Tennessee and Florida, the way that, you know, it kind of used to be back in the 90s, that jab doesn't work anymore. Spurrier used to love to sort of zing Georgia with that. You can't really do that anymore. This idea of, and this is one that really, I think, got a lot of Georgia fans sort of rubbed the wrong way in years past of, you know, every year at signing day, Georgia brings in a lot of 4- and 5-star players, but I'm not sure what happens to them when they get here because they never seem to get any better. You know, Spurrier said something along those lines about Georgia in the past. Well, you definitely can't zing Georgia with that jab anymore. Look at not just the way that Kirby Smart's stockpiling talent in a way that Georgia's never done before in the program's history, but look at how many of these guys earlier in their career are becoming pretty significant contributors for Georgia. So all those jabs that Spurrier used to love, they just don't really work anymore. So now when Paul Feinbaum asks Steve Spurrier to say, hey, what do you think of Georgia? Well, Spurrier's just sort of forced to admit, you know what? This program's actually pretty good right now. So if you've been waiting for a long time to see Spurrier give his sort of due credit to Georgia and the program that's being built here, this is the moment you've been waiting for. Spurrier with Paul Feinbaum yesterday.
Georgia is a program that had a difficult time beating your programs and really beating a lot of Florida teams. What has changed there so dramatically, or has it changed dramatically under Kirby Smart?
Yeah, Paul, they're building something that looks pretty formidable up there, as you will agree. They're big. They can run the ball down your throat, and they can play defense. And when you can run it down people's throat and play defense, that's about 90% of the game right there. And then they've got speed, they've got size, they got talent. Kirby and his guys are excellent recruiters, and they know how to coach. And we got to recruit with them. That's what we need to do, and Tennessee needs to do it also. And we haven't played them yet, though. Who knows what will happen this year? On paper right now, they're by far the best, but we still got to go play the game, so we just got to wait and see how it plays out.
Listen, y'all. I mean, you know for a fact Spurrier hates having to say that. I mean, I actually saw Spurrier in Jacksonville last year as Georgia was just walking the dog up and down the field with Florida at the cocktail party. And the look on his face sort of said everything you needed to know, that he's not enjoying that moment right now and sort of the winter of his, you know, sort of life as a football dignitary. Seeing Georgia be as good as it is, his alma mater Florida being as not so good as it is. And, yeah, he says, listen, we'll still play the game and we'll see how it turns out. But Did you catch the little note in there about Florida and Tennessee and the other so-called powers of the SEC East? They've got to find a way to recruit with Georgia right now. And, yeah, I mean, it is obviously obvious to so many of us that Georgia's sort of lapping the field when it comes to talent acquisition here. And the fact that it's also obvious to Steve Spurrier, I got to admit, that's a pretty nice thing for me to consider. So with that kind of out of the way, let me turn our attention to something that's a little bit more serious, a little bit more football related, and really relevant for what Georgia's going to do against Missouri on Saturday afternoon. A lot has been made of the lack of pass rush for Georgia thus far this season. Mike Griffith wrote a very provocative piece at DogNation.com yesterday about how lowly Georgia ranks in the country in terms of its overall number of sacks thus far this season. Kirby Smart was asked about this on Saturday after another game in which Georgia, pretty good defensively, but not in the backfield, not wreaking havoc with tackles for loss, although DeAndre Baker did have one, not really wreaking havoc with sacks especially. That's the big issue here. And Kirby Smart sort of once again kind of publicly downplays all of this. You may have heard this from Saturday night, but here's a reminder again of Kirby not thinking this is too big of a deal right now, even though some fans and many in the media have sort of raised it as a concern. Here's Kirby.
I didn't think we ever got a chance to rush the passer. Put a stopwatch on how long that guy had the ball. I'm looking more at total yards per completion and how many points they had on the scoreboard. It's what matters to me. You know what I mean? I know everybody wants sacks. Everybody wants pass rush. But if you put a stopwatch on it and you take the whole offensive line off the field and don't block anybody, I don't know that we could have got there. So you better defend the pass.
So Kirby Smart says, listen, the issue with the pass rush here is the other team, South Carolina, Middle Tennessee State, Austin Peay, the three teams that Georgia's played thus far, they're all moving so fast offensively that we couldn't even get to the quarterback, even if there was no offensive line on the field. That may or may not be true. The honest truth is I don't really know. But what I do know is this, is that while some fans are concerned about this, and really even as recently as, you know, last week we were talking about this on Dog Nation Daily before Kirby was even asked about this here today, you know, most fans are going to say, well, as long as Georgia's winning in a blowout, why would I care about the total number of sacks? That's a stat that matters less than the final score. For the most part, that is true. As long as Georgia's a blowout winner and has been through three games thus far this season, the total number of sacks seems like a triviality more so than some sort of really important concern. But Georgia is going to face another passing team on Saturday against Missouri. And I guess the question comes up of, is Georgia going to be able to keep blowing opponents out if it doesn't start getting to the quarterback more? A guy that had an interesting kind of exchange about this on Twitter yesterday is a guy named Chad Peltier, who is a kind of a college football analytics type guy. You've heard me reference Bill Conley before. Chad kind of runs around with him a little bit, shows up in Football Study Hall, shows up on Football Outsiders, some of those websites that really sort of approach college football from this sort of advanced stats, analytics, viewpoint here. And Chad had a couple tweets yesterday about the Georgia defense that I thought were really interesting. Now, I want to show you these. I'll admit right away that much like you, I don't really understand the full context for all of this, but I still think it leads us to kind of an interesting conversation. Here's the first tweet from Chad Peltier from Football Outsiders Football Study Hall referencing Georgia yesterday as their stats kind of come together here. Chad says, it's pretty amazing that UGA can rank even 40th in passing marginal efficiency while also being 127th in sack rate. Now, the 127th in sack rate is a little easier to understand than passing marginal efficiency, whatever that is. Hard to tabulate exactly how that stat comes together, but we know that 40th is sort of above average, whereas from a sack standpoint, Georgia's much lower than that. But the other tweet from Chad that I found most interesting of all is, while there may be one example of something that Georgia's not particularly good at right now, sacking the quarterback, there is something else that Georgia has excelled at, and what Georgia's very good at the moment probably takes some of the heat off of what Georgia has not been very good. Here's one more tweet from Chad Peltier from Football Outsiders Football Study Hall, who says that Georgia is 88th in an unadjusted defensive success rate, 40th in defensive marginal efficiency, but then he says it's okay when you're allowing only 2.4 points per scoring opportunity and fifth in the country in that measurement, and are also best in the country at preventing big plays. So the first part of that tweet, once again, a little bit hard to understand, but everybody gets the idea of, hey, when someone gets close to scoring, and for the advanced stat guys, that's not the red zone at the 20, that's the 40-yard line and in. When someone gets close to scoring against Georgia this year, Georgia's done a really good job of keeping that team off the scoreboard. The the defensive stand after the Jake Fromm interception at South Carolina kind of comes to mind in this regard. Other moments kind of come to mind in that regard as well. Georgia's been pretty good at keeping teams off the scoreboard, been pretty good at limiting big plays. And as long as Georgia's doing that, the fact that it's not getting a whole lot of sacks right now, well, that, I guess for most fans, that's not going to matter too much. But here's what I would suggest, especially this Saturday against Missouri. When you get ready to take on Drew Locke, a guy that could be a first-round pick, likely will be a first-round pick in this upcoming spring's NFL draft, just keeping that team off the scoreboard and just limiting that team on the big plays, that may not be enough. This may be one of those days on Saturday where Georgia also has to find a way to kind of get into the backfield, make things difficult for Drew Locke. Now, I believe the Georgia defensive unit has the talent to make that happen. Haven't really needed to for the first three games, but the rest of the season, we probably are going to need to see a little bit more of that at some point in time. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player there for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud. However you get to us, we're just really, really glad that you are with us and really thankful for Marco's Pizza making it all possible. You know what? Last night you watched a lot of Monday Night Football. Tonight maybe you're watching the Braves. They try to get back to their winning ways here. Whatever you're settling in and doing for your nighttime routine, I think one of the things that can make a night better is to sort of give whoever it is in your family that does the cooking the night off and turn to the folks at Marlowe's, say hello primo by taking advantage of two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day. There at Marcos.com, I'm talking about authentic Italian quality pizza. You will love it, and there's a variety for everybody, especially with two medium, two topping pizzas, and the price can't be beat. $6.99 each. It's no promo code to remember, no coupon to clip, just every store, every day, the Italian way. Go to Marcos.com for more on that. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up with our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here. A lot of recruiting stuff to get into with Jeff. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here. Brought to you today by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in Towns County, Georgia. And off the very top of the program, I asked you a question. I said, all right, let's picture for a second that it's 3rd and 5, and you've got game on the line for Georgia in a very big game. What kind of play do you want Georgia to call? Who do you want the ball going to? Now, I think there are probably a few people that have a few different answers. But for me, I think my answer is probably reflective here of what many of you probably think right now. Somehow, some way, let's find a way to get Mecole Hardman the football in that situation. Whether it's a jet sweep, whether it's a short throw, whether it's a deep throw where he creates separation with the defensive back. Right now, Mecole Hardman is maybe that guy for UGA. So much so that some people are even, I guess, trying to have a conversation about should Mecole be in line for some national awards attention. I thought that Chip Towers wrote an interesting piece about this at adognation.com of could you possibly use the Senate's Heisman and Hardman in the same sentence here? Well, in Chip's piece, he got a quote from Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN.com, who gave a fairly, I think, a thorough assessment of kind of where Mecole Hardman ranks in all of this right now. Here is what Mark Schlabaugh had to say about that. I'll read you the quote. Mark says that he's on the radar. I just think it's really early, and he probably hasn't done enough yet to be considered one of the top five candidates, but Hardman's probably in the group after that. And with the punt return for a score on Saturday, some of the other stuff that he's done, I guess that's probably why he sort of gets into that group on that. Now, for what it's worth, when it comes to Mecole Hardman, his sort of status as a national awards contender, Kirby Smart said after the game on Saturday that, listen, he likes the idea of it, but it's not really his job to sort of push any of that kind of narrative. Here is Kirby on Mecole.
You know, that's not for me to decide as far as national acclaim. I think that's something that you guys handle more than me. I respect Mecole. I think he has elite speed. He's physical. He's a lot more confident with his hands. The speed he has, you see it. I mean, you guys see it in the burst, the ability to make people miss. And he continues to gain confidence with that. So I'm all for our players getting all the notoriety they can, but that's not my objective.
So here's kind of my point on this entire topic. As much as I'd love to see Mecole Hardman in New York City as a Heisman finalist, as much as I'd love to see him get that kind of national attention here this season, realistically, I just don't think it's going to happen. A, this is a very hard award for a wide receiver to win. B, there are going to be a couple wide receivers nationally. They're going to get more attention than Mecole, even with the sort of punt return role that he also finds himself in. That just may not be quite enough to sort of get him over the top. But the one distinction that Hardman could have, and for Georgia fans, this may be even more important than some sort of national award buzz, the fact that he may become that go-to guy for Georgia here. With apologies to DeAndre Swift and Jake Fromm and Elijah Holyfield and other names that you consider, he could be that trusted guy for Georgia when the game is on the line. At some point, Georgia will play a close game. It's going to need an offensive playmaker, and Mecole Hardman could be that guy. As I said, for most Georgia fans, that may be more important than being on any kind of awards watch list by the end of the season. Around the Doghouse today is brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in Towns County, Georgia. And listen, when there's an away game for Georgia, one of the things you're going to want to do is head to a Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa for the weekend. That's including maybe this weekend against Missouri there as well. You can watch the game right there on Brassy Sports Bar. They got pool tables, darts, fire pit, the whole deal here. It's just 2 hours away from Atlanta in Towns County, Georgia, which is also home to the beautiful Lake Chattoog. So make sure you keep listening for more details as well, because coming up here on Dog Nation Daily in the very near future, we're also going to give you a giveaway that'll give you a chance to get out of your own doghouse if you've been watching a little bit of 2-inch football lately. How about taking your significant other to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa there in Towns County, Georgia? They will certainly love that. It's great to have you with us here on the program here today as well. Speaking of a lot of recruiting stock, as I mentioned before, it's time for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all as we get ready to say hello to Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Love Tuesdays. Love the Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. That means we get a chance to talk to Jeff Sintel. Also, I'm going to tell you about how Dog Nation's going to be at Marlowe's a little bit later on this week, so stick around for that. Jeff, first of all, good morning to you. Thank you for being a part of our program once again here today, and I hope that you're doing well.
Hey, man. Brandon, I'm doing great. That Brasstown Valley sounds pretty good. And one other thing, I want to invite everybody to check out our forum. We got a few topics that are popping right there. One of those is that whole Justin Fields, Jake Fromm debate. But yeah, another one is a recent one about why I even threw an opinion in there where I think Georgia's defense, when it comes to sacks, when it comes to Kirby Smart, maybe that philosophy of sacks, I do think that sacks are overrated. And we actually have some information to back up an opinion, and not just mere speculation, which is, I know, folks are getting used to seeing on our forum as well.
Well, I look forward to reading that. Forum.dognation.com. One of my favorite things on game days has become being a part of the forum and sort of interaction we're able to have with a lot of Georgia fans who are watching these games very closely. I love the back and forth there and being able to kind of give some first-person perspective of actually being in the stadium in most cases, but also hearing from some folks who've got a lot of time invested in Georgia Bulldogs. That's a really fun in-game conversation. We do it every single Saturday at forum.dognation.com. All right, let me get to something else you've written, Jeff. Before we get into the heart of the matter with a lot of recruiting stuff, let me deal with your freshman report from DogNation.com coming off the win against Middle Tennessee State. There were a few names in particular that kind of jumped out to me from your freshman report. I kind of just want to ask you about all this at one time and let you sort of take the conversation whichever direction you want to go. I did not realize that Azeez Ojulari got into the game on Saturday, but I was really happy for him given what he's been dealing with in terms of, you know, coming back from an injury. Nice to see him working his way back to a full recovery. I thought it was also kind of cool that Otis Reese got a chance to play apparently a good bit on Saturday, given the fact that he was not a guy on the field against South Carolina. Maybe that speaks well for Reese's chance to work his way to more playing time by the time this season is done. And then another guy that you've talked, you know, kind of a good bit about, Jordan Davis, that sort of big, beefy defensive lineman there, potentially in the middle one day for the Georgia defense, to see him get a chance to sort of get some of that started, I thought was kind of cool too. So that's three names from your freshman list that sort of jumped off the page to me there for, you know, various reasons. What was your overall take of the first year guys and kind of how they performed on Saturday?
Yeah, Brandon, I think the first thing for me was maybe the first thing you mentioned. We have, obviously, every week our thoughts on who really flashed, and this was obviously Justin Fields' day. He got the chance to play some, get some extended playing time. He actually got his earliest playing time of the season, if you go on the game clock, where he showed up late in the first quarter. Now, a lot of folks might wonder and dig too deep into that. Well, it would actually, Brandon, it came on the fourth series of the Middle Tennessee game, which ironically he also entered the game on the fourth series of the Austin Peay game. And as we all know, Justin did not enter the game until the game was pretty much decided in the second half against South Carolina. Looks like there's a typical entry point for him against non-conference opponents. It'll be interesting to see how that matriculates to Missouri. But another name you mentioned, Brandon, I want to spotlight that one as well. I'm a guy, I'm a reporter, most folks know me by now, that I like to spotlight the feel-good or the human interest points of it. I really liked Azeez Ojulari getting in there, and that was his Georgia debut, especially on a scrimmage down. And he came away with a tackle for loss for the Bulldogs on what ended up being the last scrimmage snap for Middle Tennessee in the game. Folks got to remember, that's another knee injury. That's another knee that has came along quite well under Ron Corson's care.
Yeah.
He injured that knee late November of his senior season back in 2017. And here he was in mid-September making a tackle for loss in the third game of the season for his Georgia Bulldogs.
I've got another freshman I want to talk to you about. Before that, though, let me remind you, speaking of Marlowe's Tavern, we do the Marlowe's Tavern Tell All with Jeff Sintel every Tuesday right here on Dog Nation Daily. Dog Nation also excited about being at Marlowe's Tavern this upcoming Thursday, the Brookhaven location, for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. Now, we're going to get you ready for Georgia and Missouri with a Big Game Preview. Our buddy Mike Griffith is going to be on hand, his first time ever being one of our Dog Nation Marlowe's events. It all goes down from 6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday from the Marlowe's in Brookhaven, which is 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. Now, for those of you listening on the either radio show or the podcast, let me give you that address one more time. 3575 Durden Drive there in Atlanta for the Marlowe's in Brookhaven on Thursday. Also need to tell you one more thing here. You've been to one of our Marlowe's events before. What's going to make this one bigger and better than a lot of the things we've done in the past? You may have heard and may have seen at DogNation.com. We're doing our Dog Nation Invasion to Baton Rouge. Marlowe's giving away a trip for two there to the Dog Nation Invasion in Baton Rouge. You may have signed up for that at DogNation.com. If you haven't, there's still time for you to do that. We're also going to announce the winner of that there live that night at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. I'm being told that if you show up there that night, you can also get a handwritten entry to go along with all the online entries. You can do that there that night as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun, 6 to 8 p.m. this upcoming Thursday at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Jeff, with that said, let me talk about another freshman, Cade Mays, here for a moment. And what I told Chip Towers when he joined us yesterday is one of the things that I'm hesitant to do as a guy that's, you know, not a former coach, not a former player, and not watching, like, the game film. I'm rewatching the TV broadcast. I'm in the stadium, but I'm not watching the game film, and I'm not a trained eye necessarily anyway. I think those of us in the media have a tendency to make too much out of sort of specific plays and maybe sort of ignore the larger body of work here. If you highlight just a couple of plays for Cade Mays, it doesn't look very good. It's the hold that he gets called on and then the sort of whiff along with Charlie Warner on what turned into be a pretty big hit on Jake Fromm that led to a fumble recovered by Ben Cleveland. On just those two plays alone, it makes it seem like Cade Mays didn't have a very good game. The truth is, I don't know if he did or if he didn't, but I would think that at least part of what happened on Saturday ends up being a learning experience for Mays. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, yeah. It's his first start in the ACC. Well, it's not conference play, but it's his first start for Georgia for an SEC team. It's a top three team. Now it's a top two team. So anything Cade Mays does is going to get himself acclimated, and it's reps. Reps and experience and coachable film is what matters. Getting a young man out on the field and helping him make and seeing him making mistakes, correctable mistakes, that's part of the growth experience for any young player. I think Cade Mays is going to do things well when someone asks him to fire off the ball, be tenacious, and try to level the man in front of him. He's done that before. That's a skill set he knows how to do. He's got the bend, he's got the arms, he's got the power, he's got the skill set, and he's got the natural aggression to do all that. If you ask Cade Mays to do that, I think he's going to do very well as a freshman in the SEC. It's those other things, those pass sets, combination blocks, communication issues as well. Those are the things that he's going to have to show some growth in to be a dependable frontline starter in the SEC, especially at left tackle. The thing I wonder about is that left side of Georgia's line right now, especially if you ask those gentlemen to drop back in pass sets repeated times, maybe in a 4-minute offense or a 2-minute offense, especially type setting. I think Solomon Kinley is really great at run blocking. I think he struggles some right now in terms of pass protection. I think the same simple vanilla description can also apply to Cade Mays, but Cade Mays hasn't been in the Georgia program for several seasons like Solomon Kinley has. I think that left side of the line, should Andrew Thomas not be a go on Saturday at noon in Missouri, I think that's a big thing for Georgia fans to look at on Saturday.
Yeah, I think you're right about that for sure. Let's talk about some 2019 recruits here for a moment. We do Before the Hedges tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon. We'll do a lot of recruiting talk there then. One of the things that I hope we do on air tomorrow afternoon is show some more of these highlights that John Emery Jr. keeps piling up. Another really big performance for him where, I mean, on video, he's about as dazzling looking as I think a Georgia running back commit has been really in quite some time. But what I want to ask you about on Emery, though, is not the highlights. It's obviously we've seen a lot of those by now. It's what Ed Orgeron had to say after the win against Auburn on Saturday, where he was, you know, saying something to the effect of, hey, calling recruits been a lot more fun lately. I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it was something along the lines of, you know, it's been really fun talking to recruits lately because there's more buzz in Louisiana now that LSU's pulled the upset win here against Auburn. In Emery's case in particular, you know, we know that LSU's trying to put the full court press on him. Is he the kind of young man, you know him well, is he the kind of young man that potentially is going to be swayed if all of a sudden LSU looks like a more attractive program than it looked like before the season began?
I don't think so, Brandon. I think what John's going to look at is basically the future of the program and what lies for him there. I think a lot of smart LSU recruits are going to look at LSU and appreciate the success and see them making strides, basically putting the detail on that hot seat for Coach O, at least for the time being. But you look at Joe Burrow, he's not going to be there long term. And then next year, LSU fans are still looking at who's going to be the quarterback. They've got sort of a stabilizer right there now in Joe Burrow, but what's going to happen next season? I think John Emery seems very set with Georgia. And maybe these recent wins are going to do more, in my opinion, to maybe stabilize Tyrion Davis, Ty Davis's commitment to LSU, rather than sway a guy like John Emery Jr. to think closely more about LSU. According to my reporting right now, John Emery Jr. has no other official visits planned,
okay,
except the one to UGA after the season. He also will sign early. His family still feels that it's a relief that they will be able to sign early. He's not a graduate. He's not an early graduate, so he would not be in Athens until June of next year. But you're right, Brandon. When you look at the highlights every week, I think on BTH, one of the things I've thought about doing is kind of spotlighting a commitment of the week performance.
Yeah.
And right now, it could probably be the John Emery Jr. Award or the Dominic Blaylock Award, because both of those gentlemen are making Georgia fans feel quite content about the players that are coming into the pipeline for 2019 as well.
I want to talk to you about Blaylock here in a moment. Let me just play devil's advocate with one thing on Emery, though. And honestly, this really is a devil's advocate position because I just want to sort of argue the case that could be made by someone else. That if you look at LSU on Saturday, while it won at Auburn, it's not like it lit the world on fire offensively. I mean, this is still a team that needs sort of a, you know, trusted, dependable bell cow style running back. We know that John Emery Jr., with some of his public quotes before, has sort of talked about, you know, this is a guy that does pay attention to depth charts there a bit. I mean, I guess that's the only thing from an LSU standpoint that might concern me for John Emery is the fact that not only does he see a team right now that sort of looks maybe a little bit better than some thought, it's not like some running back has sort of stepped into that, you know, Leonard Fournette, you know, Darius Geis type role and become the obvious heir apparent to all those carries and all those yards and all that productivity. And, you know, Emery's sort of spoken about that issue publicly in the past. I guess that's the only thing that does come to mind there.
Yeah, he wants to be get a lot of carries, but you got to look at that maybe from both sides of the fence then, Brandon. I think Georgia, and first of all, you know, you have to do two things with Zamir White. First of all, that's his second consecutive knee injury. He has one significant knee injury to each knee now. So if you're in the process of making sure the Georgia program has an ample supply of playmakers in the backfield, you can't really expect Zamir yet, even though he has tremendous fortitude and character and all that stuff, you can't expect him to come back and be the same player that he's flashed on film just yet, especially in his first full season back in 2019. So you start looking at the Georgia backfield, and Elijah Holyfield's having a great season so far. Brian Herrien, those guys have at the most one more year left in the Georgia program. James Cook seems like he's getting a defined role right now as an edge back. as a guy that works the corners right now for Georgia and shows a lot of burst in doing that. And then that leaves DeAndre Swift right now, who he's the starter and kind of the clear-cut top talent in the backfield right now for Georgia. But look at that injury that flared up against Middle Tennessee. What if that would have happened against an LSU in a tight ball game or Auburn in a tight ball game? Just goes to show, I think a special talent like John Emery Jr. can come in right away and get a lot of meaningful carries even in Georgia's system right now. And I think that's a big thing that's very attractive to John Emery Jr. Those highlights, man, are just crazy. I don't know what the favorite highlight for me is yet.
Yeah.
How he kind of does that Keanu Reeves move in the Matrix where he bends in real time.
Sure.
To avoid defenders, or he's carrying six guys, or he's showing that great burst and shiftiness in traffic. I will also say one more thing pertinent to the running back discussion, and this is just a nice, friendly Dog Nation type of thing to do. Everybody wish Zamir White a happy birthday today, because he celebrates his birthday today as well.
Well said there on that, Jeff Sintel. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Towel with Jeff Sintel every Tuesday here on Dog Nation Daily. And right now, Marlowe's is featuring fresh local ingredients at your Marlowe's every day, including right now. You can stop by and see what's being cooked up with Sweetgrass Dairy cheeses. Now, Southern Living Magazine named Sweetgrass Dairy's original Little Moo one of the best Southern-made foods of 2016. These cheeses are unique because the cows are outside for 12 hours a day and are barn-free. And you know happy cows means better-tasting cheese. So go check that out at the Marlowe's Tavern closest to you. And don't forget, we're going to be at Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven coming up this Thursday for our big game preview and announcing our Dog Nation Invasion to Baton Rouge giveaway winner courtesy of Marlowe's Tavern. All right, Jeff, coming up before we say goodbye to you in a moment, a big-time recruiting target currently committed to a different SEC school was spotted in Athens on Saturday. I want your thoughts on that. Before that, though, you mentioned Dominic Blaylock. I watched a lot of Blaylock on ESPNU on Friday night, or ESPN2, whichever one of those ESPNs it was on. I watched a lot of the game, and I was so glad that he got this showcase performance because, as you know, Jaden Hazelwood gets, like, if it's a pie chart, it's like two-thirds of the pie for attention for Hazelwood at the expense of Dominic Blaylock. Hazelwood, because it's a little bit more of a dramatic recruitment, just gets a lot more talk than Blaylock does, who's been rock solid to Georgia the entire time. But what Blaylock showed you on ESPN Friday night is, this is a young man that, from an athletic standpoint, I'm not sure he takes a backseat to anybody. I loved his highlight reels this past weekend. A lot of it came in the Wildcat. And just the way that, you know, he sort of takes a snap and makes guys miss, really showing that, you know, special level of athleticism, not just running past people, but kind of dodging people and forcing would-be tacklers to the ground there. I mean, Blaylock, I think, showed a lot of people something pretty special on Friday that may not have known that he was actually working with that kind of skill set before he put it on display for a national TV audience.
Yeah, I think he kind of wakes up the echoes or the embers of a Georgia fan's memory of a couple players. And I think one of those would be Terrence Edwards. I think another one of those would probably be even maybe Nico Hardman Jr. right now.
I was thinking about Hardman watching the game. I don't mean to cut you off, Jeff, but I was definitely thinking about Hardman from Elbert County when I was watching that game. Go ahead.
But I've got another one for him that I think, to me, is the best maybe Xerox of what I see Dominic Blaylock doing and maybe projecting to Georgia. I see a guy like Hines Ward, a guy Ooh. That can do a lot of things, quarterback spot, maybe not the fastest daredevil or fastest Tasmanian devil on the field. Maybe the shiftiness, maybe the shiftiest, a lot of ball skills, can work some plays at running back, can work some plays at quarterback, can also go up and get the ball, very precise in his routes, can be physical when he wants to, not considered a burner, but considered one of the fastest guys on the field, and just a true gamer, a winner, a ball player. I think the Dominic Blaylock gumbo is a lot of those players that I think should really make Georgia fans feel excited about what he could bring to the table in Athens.
All right, let's finish our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with this. I think one of the buzziest things to happen from a recruiting standpoint, the Middle Tennessee State game on Saturday, a lot of talk about the fact that junior college defensive back, a guy that Georgia kind of went to the 11th hour on, DJ Daniel, made the choice to commit to South Carolina. But I know, Jeff, you spotted him in Athens on Saturday. What can you tell us about Daniel being in Athens, and what does this mean for his relationship with the Gamecocks right now?
Yeah, it was reported by other sites as well that Daniel was in town, and very interesting considering it was an unofficial visit. And most of the times you see recruits that have a that have a badge identifying where they're from and that they're identifying as a visitor. I don't know if DJ Daniel was displaying his as prominently as he could when I saw him in Athens. Just speaks to me that that's a guy that maybe did not want his appearance to be well chronicled along the visit, but that's a guy that really came down to Georgia and South Carolina for his decision. It was South Carolina 1 month. The next month, closer to his decision, it was Georgia. And then finally, at the end, it was South Carolina. Pretty tight race there. I know DJ Daniel pays attention to wins and losses and how teams have looked so far. Be very interesting whether Georgia can get back on his mind and very big in his mind as his recruiting goes forward. I know this. Lots of folks try to debate online about whether Georgia soured on DJ Daniel and that's why South Carolina scooped him up, because maybe that sounds better to a lot of folks. Just going to say this fairly simply. DJ Daniel was a take. DJ Daniel was wanted by Georgia. The fact that DJ Daniel was also back in Athens recently shows the recruiting attention the staff is still paying him. So I would say that Georgia still needs to check off a lot of defensive backs for 2019. And the ideal wish list would definitely include DJ Daniel.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Jeff. I think this does prove that whatever the debate was after Daniel chose the Gamecocks, that Georgia was sort of in the entire way on him. And the fact that he's back in Athens again, no matter where he ends up signing, the fact that he's back in Athens again tells you that this is a player that Georgia is still very interested in. Really good stuff from you here, Jeff, as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon for Before the Hedges. We'll do some more recruiting talk there then. I'll also enjoy reading everything from you there at dognation.com as well. Really good stuff from Tyreek Stevenson and the Centel Intel. If you haven't checked that out at dognation.com, you need to make sure you do that. And, Jeff, I hope you have yourself a great day.
Hey, everybody, remember, lock your timelines and your data planners before the hedges, BTH, 3 p.m.-ish Wednesdays on Facebook Live.
All right, Jeff, we'll see you then.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff there from Jeff Centel. I love him on the Marlowe's Tavern Tell All every Tuesday right here on Dog Nation Daily. Really good stuff. We got some good stuff coming up for SEC Through as well. Let me also tell you this. That once the SEC Through is done, we turn our attention kind of back to Georgia here. A very provocative quote that former Georgia quarterback David Green gave to us last week here on Dog Nation Daily. You may have missed it when it was spoken, but I think it speaks to how things are changing for the better here at Georgia. And in comparison to what's going on in Florida here, I think this is very important. We will do that with you after our SEC Through here. And as we get ready to get cranking up on our SEC Through, let me also remind you that, you know, every week here we talk about those SEC games and we make our picks about what's going to happen, who's going to win. Many of you are also making your own picks and you're making money off of them when you do, because the one thing I've been hearing for years now going back on Dog Nation Daily is, BA, thanks so much for turning me on to MyBookie, because when I win at MyBookie, I get a fast, no-hassle payout. And that's obviously what MyBookie's known for. And if you're a sports book like that, what else would you want to be known for other than taking good care of your customers when you win? MyBookie does that. And right now, they've even got a better offer for you. How about your first deposit match dollar for dollar when you use the promo code DOGNATION? So simply find MyBookie online. It's MyBookie. Find MyBookie online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. You can get your first deposit matched up to dollar for dollar. You play, you win, you get paid. It's as simple as that with MyBookie. Find them online today. But make sure you use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. The promo code Dog Nation there in my bookie. All right. As you might imagine, there is a lot of love coming the way of LSU here after its win against Auburn on the road as a double-digit underdog on Saturday. Some of this I agree with. Some of this I don't. Let me start with something I don't agree with. George Schroeder, USA Today, kind of suggesting that after this win against Miami, win against Auburn, that LSU now has the pieces to make a playoff run here in 2018. I think that's too much, way too soon. The simple reason why here is, while LSU has certainly built a very impressive resume, when you think about playoff run, that means either beating one or both of Alabama and Georgia. Now, LSU gets both those games at home, so from that standpoint, they're a little bit like Auburn was in 2017. But right now, I still don't believe that LSU is, while they are good enough to keep it close and threaten both Alabama and Georgia, I don't think LSU is good enough to win that game. And, you know, a little earlier in the show, we spent a good bit of time kind of talking about the lack of Georgia pass rush and Does Georgia need to generate more of that against an opponent like Missouri on Saturday with Drew Locke and maybe some of the other teams that Georgia will play here in 2018? A game where that might actually not be quite as important as you think might actually be LSU. Let me explain why. Joe Burrow has been pretty good for LSU. I would say that, at least just on the eye test alone, he's better than Danny Etling has been the last couple years prior to Burrow arriving on campus. But one thing that that Burrow still doesn't do a lot of is complete passes. His completion percentage is still like down there in the 50s. This is a guy that's trying to avoid interceptions, which means that he's not going to throw the ball into tight windows very much. So on October 13th, when Georgia plays, that's one of those games where what Georgia does really well, kind of, you know, push its back seven back, limit big plays, keep the ball in front, and make sure that there's no you know, big break down there. Against LSU, I think that should be plenty. Even though LSU is looking good right now, that's still a game I think Georgia wins on the road. However, a point that I kind of agree with about LSU came from Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, who in his power rankings this week actually ranked LSU number two in the country, which is obviously also ahead of Georgia. And from that standpoint, while I think that Georgia will eventually beat LSU when the two teams play, by resumes alone, I don't think there's any denying LSU's got a better resume than Georgia right now. The only major win Georgia has to this point is beating South Carolina. LSU's got two big resume-enhancing performances against both Miami and Auburn. Got to give them credit for that. I don't mind the fact that Dennis Dodd did. Here's another sort of chapter in a juicy story we've been following for a while. I've been telling you that I believe that the relationship between Tennessee Athletic Director Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt is sort of destined to be a problem. We talked about our buddy Jesse Simonton the other day that spotted Fulmer at a Tennessee practice in sweatpants, sort of coach's play card in hand, like doing some legitimate coaching. I've said this is a guy that's trying to, you know, work his way back there on that sideline. At least that's the visual appearance of all of this. Well, Jeremy Pruitt was asked about that this week about, hey, listen, are you allowing Philip Fulmer to help you? Is he coaching your offensive line here a little bit? And here's, in my own head, I sort of hear this as sort of a terse response from Jeremy Pruitt. Let me show you the quote on the screen. I'll read it to you. He says, well, it's kind of like when I get ready to go somewhere. My granddaddy used to be a truck driver, so he always knows the best routes. So I think I'd be foolish if I didn't talk to Coach Fulmer about anything in the football program, not just offensive line, but anything. I'm asking him questions all the time. That's Jeremy Pruitt to reporters there in Knoxville. Boy, I don't know about that. I mean, in a subsequent quote, Pruitt was also, you know, saying, and listen, you know, Philip Fulmer speaks to all the teams, not just the football team. He's the athletic director. He speaks to all the teams. That seems like a guy that doesn't want to play along with the narrative very much when it comes to this kind of stuff. We know what Pruitt's personality is like a little bit because of the 2 years that he's been here at Georgia. I'm going to assume here, and this is just an assumption, but I'm going to make the assumption nonetheless, that I don't think that that Jeremy Pruitt's none too happy about Philip Fulmer's presence there at Tennessee practices. And I think the quote may give you a little bit of a hint at that. Even if he doesn't come right out and say it, we'll make that your SEC through. By the way, speaking of Tennessee, they do play Florida on Saturday. And that is a game I'm really kind of looking forward to. We'll have more on that throughout the week here. But speaking of the Florida Gators, you know, yesterday for our DN90, and if you've never seen DN90, it's kind of a cool thing we do on video. We do it in the afternoons. We try to keep it to 90 seconds. That's why we call it DN90. And we showed some video yesterday of Florida coach Dan Mullen kind of dancing. And, yeah, we've got the – if you're watching on video right now, you can see this. If you're not watching, I'll try to describe this to you. So this is after the Colorado State game. Mullen's trying to dance. He's a terrible dancer. It takes him like 15 seconds to get any Florida player to want to dance with him. And once it all kind of comes together here, it sort of ends up being, almost for my taste, a little too much celebrating about a game and an opponent, Colorado State, that's probably not worth celebrating all that much. In fact, Chris Doering, the former Florida wide receiver, basically tweeted the same thing. We showed you that tweet yesterday of, hey, Florida fans, don't get too excited about this win. There's still a lot of problems. Maybe you could say the same thing about not getting too excited if you're actually in the Florida locker room, Dan Mullen kind of leading the way on this. And I know that many of you are going to say, well, B.A., this is just another example of you kind of picking on Florida. You're a Gator hater, and you're using every excuse you can to sort of hate on the Gators. And that may be true. I'm obviously open to that criticism, given how outspoken I've been about the Georgia-Florida rivalry. I get all of that. But let me see if I can play some audio that kind of backs my point up here about how sometimes the games you celebrate and the way that you act after a win can sort of be indicative of a problem. I want you to listen to former Georgia quarterback David Green on our show last Thursday, talking about the change that Kirby Smart's brought to the Georgia program, and listen to how specific David gets about both in terms of what he's seen from Kirby and kind of how he knew that maybe Georgia was ready for a change before the 2016 season. This is good stuff from David Green. Take a listen to this.
Look at the culture shift that he's been able to bring to Georgia. Not only has he been able to recruit well, he's been able to change the mindset of the players. I'll never forget kind of when I knew things were starting to get off track, you know, during the Coach Rick era was when we beat, I believe, Georgia Southern in overtime, and our team celebrated like they had just won the Super Bowl. You could tell the expectations were a lot higher in stands than they were on the field. That's a problem. Yeah. And you look at what Coach has been able to bring in. There's a certain mentality and there's a certain way that he expects these guys to play, whether it's on, you know, Saturday, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday during a work week. And it doesn't matter who your opponent is. And that's what I've probably been most impressed with Kirby and the team.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, I think that this is an example of where in the past, Georgia's had this same issue. David Green points it out. 2015, the Georgia Southern game, I remember saying this on Dog Nation Daily that day, that this Georgia team celebrated way too much for beating Georgia Southern in overtime. It was a problem. I love Mark Richt, but that was a problematic moment for the program. And also, if you'll allow honesty to compel me to admit, I think Dan Mullen dancing around and celebrating after Colorado State may also be a bit of a problem for that program there as well. But that's also a them problem. Georgia gets to enjoy its great success right now as it heads undefeated to Missouri on Saturday. And, of course, right now, football success, not the only thing Georgia's enjoying. Georgia's also been ranked as the number 13 best public university in the country, according to the recent U.S. News and World Report ranking. This is the third consecutive year that the university has risen in the U.S. News ranking. So Georgia climbing the polls in football, climbing the ranking here on the academic side here as well. Now, one of the key factors in the improvement is the ever-increasing support that Georgia has received from its alumni the last few years. In fact, loyal alumni participation is one of the big factors that the U.S. News and World Report ranking uses. We've all come to expect big-time success from the football program and high-quality academics here as well. Well, there's a dedicated group of alumni that contribute to that success every single day. And all that stuff that we are very proud of when it comes to Georgia would not exist without alumni support. So if you're interested in getting involved yourself and kind of finding out about some of the things that are already going on and how you can make a difference to your alma mater, do me a favor. Check out this website, alumni.uga.edu. Now, if you're watching on a video, you can see it on the screen right now. But if you're not, I'll say it to you one more time. Alumni.uga.edu. Check that out to find out how you can get involved in the UGA Alumni Association. All right, we will get ready to wrap up our program here for today. And speaking of those lousy, stinking Gators, as I've said before, when it comes to my bias, I don't think my bias keeps me from being objective about football, but my bias does allow me to enjoy it when Florida's not doing very well. So I'm certainly sort of happy right now. In 39 days, I think I'm going to be even happier when Georgia beats Florida again. That's our Gatorator Countdown every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Also, speaking of the Florida-Tennessee game on Saturday, we have not talked yet a lot about the upcoming slate of SEC games, but I think there's actually going to be some pretty good ones here this weekend. I'm pretty fascinated by Alabama, Texas A&M. We'll do more of that during our SEC throughout the rest of the week here. A&M looked pretty good in keeping it close with Clemson. Can they keep it close on the road with Alabama? I think Mississippi State, Kentucky is a great game this upcoming Saturday. We'll learn a lot about both those teams. Auburn, Arkansas. Arkansas is pretty terrible right now. Auburn needs to bounce back. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.